I think it's time to start. First of all, good afternoon. The first talker this afternoon will be Albert Yip, and he will talk about how language works. Albert.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, fellow listeners. I'd like to begin with an apology. I love Lisp, and never programmed in anything else in my graduate days until now. I only have been programmed BCPL and Pascal in my undergraduate, and since then I just use Lisp. I don't know what is Java or C++ or whatever that is. but I have not do any research on Lisp. That's my sad bit. So, but I love to come here to join you guys. So I kind of conned the organizer and said that, well, in the early days, AI is married to Lisp, and Lisp is married to AI. They're inseparable. So if I talk about AI, I could talk about Lisp. And I use Lisp to implement all these things, so hence qualifying me coming here. But my talk is really about AI, and about language, but not Lisp, natural language. So here it goes. Well, one quick thing about GoFi, good old-fashioned AI. What is that? Some of you may need a reminder, I mean, others don't. Basically what that means is the kind of AI where we tinker about how the mind works. Processes related to the human mind. Vision, language are typical. In the early days, we talked about playing chess and all those things. And it also mainly focused on symbolic reasoning, not neural network. Don't like neural network. So symbolic reasoning, thinking about how the brain works, and we have a hypothesis, we formulate a theory, and we try to explain things. Whether the theory works or not, I don't know. Who cares? Just enjoy developing the ideas. So the GoFi method that I love since day one is Mars approach. I'm not sure how many of you remember this great guy. One of the person that I admire most in my whole life in AI. He developed a very beautiful way of doing AI. He says that we are trying to study with complex processes. So don't deceive yourself to think that it's easy. It's very difficult. It's very complex. And so if one thing about this complex process is that you have a particular input to your process, and you will develop a lot of representations, and then you come up to a high-level knowledge stage. Now, the point he wants to make is that, one, you have to understand what is made explicit in the input. What kind of information is made explicit in the input? What kind of information is also implicit in it? And then you make explicit the implicit information at the next stage, and the next stage, and the next stage, for your own purposes. That's the key to understanding these processes. They're so complicated. So much is encoded in here. Like vision. He's a vision guy. You know, you see the images, the whole image, three-dimensional thing is in that two-dimensional binary thing. So much is inside there. You need to make that explicit and go stage by stage. Don't try to fool yourself to use higher level knowledge to help you, because it's very complicated. We don't understand this. Don't use this. So that is the approach. So here I am, trying to work on language and understand how language works. Now, I'm very curious about how language works. And there are two things, these two sentences, really, really capture the difficulties in understanding language at the beginning, at the early stage. Now, the first sentence is John and Jane. There are no way you can understand the meaning if you don't understand the meaning of the word and. Okay? No, we can understand that sentence. You don't know the meaning of the words. That's why in the late 70s and early 80s, when AI researchers began to work on AI, or on language, they argue semantics parser is the way to go. All these grammars are wrong. All these syntax parsing are wrong. Semantic, because without semantic, you cannot understand language. No way. But that sentence says, semantic alone is not enough. Okay, because your understanding normally with dogs bite men, not men bite dogs. This crazy city or village, those men go around and bite dogs. Can't be right. But that's exactly what the statement says, if you understand English. Okay, so how do we separate these two things out is the biggest problem in language. How do we use knowledge? Okay. Now, a lot of linguists and a lot of studies about language worry a lot about sentences like this, and how do we get the correct meanings from this sentence. Okay. Now, I'm talking about semantic approach. I'm talking about trying to understand. I'm not trying to produce a perfect or beautiful program. I'm trying to understand only how we can use meaning to understand language and at the same time know how to create those structural things that we need to. Therefore, I'm talking about semantic puzzles, but I'm not no interest in solving this kind of problem. Like say, how do you understand the real meaning of this sentence? Whether you're feeding her with chicken McNuggets or you're feeding her chicken with McNuggets. Huh? I'm not interested in this kind of resolving this kind of problem. This is a high-level problem. I'm simply interested in how the language process itself works. So, like any GoFi approach, I went back to the fundamentals. I don't like the grammar approach of the linguistic because English is my second language. And I didn't learn, I just remember I learned that much about the grammar. You ask me about the grammar, I have no idea. And you most probably heard a lot of my sentences are ungrammatical and yet you understand them. So there's something wrong with just using the grammar there. So I don't like the approach. I went back to the fundamentals. I go to the psycholinguistic theories of language and see what I can find. Voila! I love that. Baker's paradox. So the psycholinguists say, well, children cannot learn the grammar of the language. Why? They call it no negative evidence. It's the poverty of the stimulus. The stimulus is not rich enough for the children to learn. Most important one is that there is no negative evidence. What do you mean by that? A simple example. You can't teach the children when the child says, yesterday I go to school. You can't say, naughty, naughty, naughty. It should be yesterday I went to school. The children will laugh at you, not sure what you're talking about. You can't force the negative thing. Even researchers try 10 times telling them to change a simple grammatic error, they just laugh at you and repeat the error. You can't change. Well, nowadays, with research into learning, we know that if you have negative and positive evidence, it's easy to learn. There's so many algorithms that you can learn. But without negative evidence, it's impossible to learn. So what is the solution by linguists? Well, the famous one, Chomsky, universal grammar. The child are born with the universal grammar, so he said. And more recently, Pinker's work supported his idea because Pinker's went away to analyze a lot of the data. Now, I am not a psycholinguist. If some guys from MIT, top professors in understanding of language, analyze the data and come up with a conclusion that this is true, I gracefully accept that. Because I love that conclusion anyway. So, and he suggests a solution. What is the solution? The solution is semantic bootstrapping. What does it mean? It means that you have this basic grammar born in you, and then you try to use meaning to bootstrap it. But that's all the idea he has. He hasn't come up with an actual algorithm to work on that. And there's a more recent algorithm from MIT as well, a guy called Siskin, but that is still also not a solution to the problem. So for a short period of time, believe me, there's no solution to the problem at the moment. So, okay, great. I'm on good footing now. I know that it doesn't work with the grammar. So let's go to the basic and look at what children do. So what do children do when they learn their first language? Well, if you go into the psychology linguistic literature, very quickly you'll find out that you have to grant the children, the infant, I'm talking about infant, that somehow magically they start to grasp concepts about the world. You have to grant them this, otherwise language doesn't work. Okay? They have to grasp concept. Very soon, they will attach a name to the concept. So for some, mama. However, their meaning is not exactly your kind of meaning. They could mean, when they say mama, it could be, mama give me a ball. Everything encoded into that one word. So this is what we call the start of the symbolic process. And more interestingly, later they will speak into two words. So they have a one-word phase, two-word phase, and then quickly, three, four, and then zoom, shoot off to long sentences. So a two-word phase. So this is all you can gather from psycholinguistic data. How am I going to make use of that? Well, that's the mama cookie, there you go. After thinking about it for a few years, I realized the significance of the split of the names in the objects and actions is not because they know how to distinguish between them, but more importantly, because they know how to combine them. Because if they say, mama, go, they must have understood that. That means they must have combined that. They must have an algorithm to combine that. Okay, not the splitting one is not the interesting bit, but they underline it. They reach a stage where they have an algorithm that they can combine that. My question then, that I start with this research is, what would the algorithm be? Well, in this very simple case, two words Not much you can think of. So consider a simple phrase, mama. What could the algorithm be? Okay. Straightforward method. Okay. Now, as I say, higher level knowledge and meanings are very complex things. I don't want to dwell into that. Good luck to those who are doing that. I simply say, mama, you come in, the words, I understand it, I go into a meaning representation of that word. Whatever that be. So I use a star notation to denote that. Whatever that word is, mama star. Now the interesting thing is, in order to combine the two words, there must be somewhere in the algorithm to tell you you combine them together. I think of a very simple, straightforward one. Is that, well, if this is going to add to this, this will have something like this to say that, well, the meanings on my left is going to be added and placed there to compose the whole meaning of the word mama give. It's very straightforward. You only got two words. Not much you can do there. Okay? So, later on, if mama give money, you'll desire that. Well, not that fast, but anyway, speed it up. Okay, a very simple algorithm I have. Well, advantage of that algorithm is you have no use of rules explicitly required identification of category. Now, that is the thing that killed the language learning, which is the biggest paradox. And you only simply learn left and right. I learn from the meanings of that, no rigid formal rules. This is not new, this is not novel. Early in the late 70s, AI researchers do think of left-right combinations. So the problem here I face is, can the algorithm be developed powerful enough, just the left and right combination, to handle the full complexity of language? Okay, can you do that? Okay. Well, this is one example. For example, if you just use simply left and right, this time sentence would be difficult to pass because the police wondered, is the man here? And they took the money and so forth. Okay. So, question, how could the basic algorithm be extended to handle the complex variations in language and in ways which do not require information not made available as input to the task process? Okay. So that is my constraint. Well, I've worked on this for several years now and come up with a program to demonstrate we can pass complex sentences. The solution I have lies in one ability to extend initial labels for more sophisticated processing of semantic objects, what I call the star there. Or more appropriate term is mental sketches. So the language process I have outlined is the words come in, you retrieve mental sketches to sketch up the brief meaning of that word and the requirements for how you combine them together. And they go on and on, and until the last word comes in, you get the mental picture. So that is the fundamental language process I'm proposing. Okay. Well, of course, then you have, once you compose a few words, you have a few mental sketches, options there, and then the next word comes in, and then you compose, and you get more and more options, and so on. Okay? We'll go through an example in a minute. Now, the first step, taking the mental sketch from the left and from the right. So here's where I start off with, the mama eat. Mama give money. So you have you now take things from the left, which is let's call it L plus, means you take mental sketches from your left, and you take mental sketches from your right. First extension is if you can take information from the right, you can give information to the right. I say, well, that could be easily learned from the cow. I mean, if I have R plus, I have R minus. I give the information there. So it turns out that there are three kinds of question mark R minus in English. One is the adjectives, which is the obvious one, which I will learn immediately without distinguishing them. And then suddenly, or after some time, they realize that some of them can only start the series of adjectives. And these are what the linguists call the determiners. And then some of them can still modify both of them, and they're called the predeterminers. Now, one explanation here. I put the word modifier here, not because that the jar has learned anything about modifier from the input. Okay. It's a label for my convenience, for the output to tell me that this is a modifier. I can simply just put big and the without putting the modifier. So same thing for I put noun and those things are only for our convenience, not for the theory. As far as the theory concerned, we don't need that. Now, how do we know and how do we handle these things? These things come from understanding. And that is what he meant by semantic parsing. Semantic parsing is not about, well, it could be about understanding how meanings are bring to understand the sentence, but in this case, it's about how meaning help us to develop routines to understand how to pass these kind of labels. We observe from the input that certain times that these few words only appear in the sequence of adjectives at the start. And so I start to understand their role, how they play in the language, and I start to develop routines to interpret them. Okay, so that's what I meant by that. So if I can, I'm not going to go through all the labels here, and then got 40 minutes, whatever. So another example here is, if I get things from the left, I can obviously give it to the left. So the L minus labeling. And it turns out the L minus labeling on its own describes the adverbs that linguists talk about. Adverbs. And it's actually quite beautiful in the sense that if that is the whole thing, adverbs goes in here, if adverbs is there, adverbs simply go to the left. It does not go to the verb. Again, linguists explain that it has attaching to a verb. In L minus, I don't care. If there's a mental sketch on my left, I give whatever I have to the left hand side. And so chuck in here, and this explains that you answer the question foolishly, and you foolishly answer the question. So in the output, I distinguish those kind of focusing. Now, again, the theory is one side, implementation is different. In order for implementation to be more efficient and faster, because ultimately I intend to use it for some applications as well, instead of just call L minus and then detecting whether it has a question mark R or not, I use the L hash figure. But in theory, this is simply an L minus. And then there's a pair. Instead of L plus R plus, there's L minus R plus. And what it does is, you bring this to here, and then wait for the thing coming from the right, and when it comes to the right, you bring this to there. L minus R plus. And here's an example of L minus R plus, the off, which is a preposition, is combined to that. This is in the paper, so. It turns out, very interestingly, that simple label there captures four powerful parts of language. Connectives, prepositions, WH words, B verbs. I think Cordis has a verb. I call this as L minus R plus. It simply connects the left to the right. Again, how does the program or the child understand the distinction between them? They don't call them connected to them because of their meanings, of understanding how they use these words, and they come up with routines to handle them because their meanings are different, and therefore the collective of these meanings, eventually when we become an adult, eventually when we get civilization and understand the language and analyze that, we call them connectives. But as far as a child is concerned, all they have to learn is L minus R plus. Which I see that's quite easy for the child to learn. Okay, how do we distinguish them? Okay, so here's an example of how sentences get passed in this method. And here is dictionary words. I have the same dictionary words in the paper. Important thing to notice is, for example, is one word that behaves has adverbs and has prepositions. Okay, you have multiple definitions there. Again, the manner here is not unimportant. We can have a lot of multiple definitions in English, and that causes a lot of mental sketches. And here, I put role speaker word. It's just my itchy hand added it. It's not important at all. Okay. And the word noun here is not important at all. So, when I see the word, I hear the word I go into my mental sketches to retrieve the meaning of I get that, and that's it. This is a stack. Stay there, I. Well, if you want to know more about I use that star. Just follow that pointer to a complex, as complex network as you want, or as simple network as you want. I don't really care. That's the meaning there. So, when saw comes in, you have, well, this is a simple one, so I skip it. I simply, saw here has question mark R plus, that means, L plus, sorry, that means take the mental sketch from the left. Okay, take it from the left, chuck it in. So I saw John. Now, when John comes in, something interesting happens. Okay, obvious one is You have an R plus, which is here on the stack, which means whatever mental sketch you have in input, give it to me on the right hand side. Okay? And this is one mental sketch, and you can combine that. But not only that, when the child has more experience in language, he or she will realize the complexity of nouns. Noun is not that simple, just one word. Noun could be multiple words. John Jackson. Okay? And the thing coming from the right may not be completed. Okay. So what that means is that I have to put that thing on the stack and create a new mega sketch. That one is one possible interpretation. This is another interpretation where the name is stacked on the stack, waiting for the next thing to come in to complete this mega sketch before it fills into here. And this is for waiting. And this one is a different slide actually, and it's a plus here, which says that this fellow is simply waiting a more complex description of this word. If John Jackson comes in, it will go in here, and then the others will get killed off. So with one John, I have three stacks now, three mental sketches. So I represent that by this one, two, three. This is the one waiting for a thing to come in. And now in comes in with two options. One has a preposition and has a manner. This one gets killed off. So this guy died because he's waiting for a noun term or a single word, a term with no question mark L or question mark R. So kills off. You hit those two. And that one combined with this, and that one gets killed off because this is a really a completed mental sketch. It's got all its whole meaning, it's not expecting anything, and this guy wants to give him more things, so it's not ready for that. So kill off. And only that one get John attached to in. And that one get killed off. The idea is just show you that the mental sketch come in, you have all this reasoning, you combine some of them, and you give that answer. So what is a complete thing here? I saw John in, where this is an adverb. Now I don't play with meaning, therefore I do not know whether this makes sense or not. But then there's the next stage where the meanings will come and decide whether this adverb is making sense or not. But here is another output which says, I saw something on the stack here, and John is in something.
Quick question.
Yes?
This seems an awful lot like chart parsing.
I'll tell you about other mechanisms in a minute.
Okay.
At the end. Especially the categorical grammar.
Okay.
Yes, that's the standard comment.
Yeah.
In the, okay, the comes in, and the has to combine with this fellow, and the has to combine with this fellow. And the, remember, is a question mark R minus star. Okay. Now, R minus means star, R minus star means it's giving something to the right. Now this is waiting something for the right, so they're all waiting for the right, and therefore that will stack on that. And this one say R minus will say well, onto this one, and that one get Q off, and you get the on top of there. Okay, so I saw John in the car. Now the car very quickly. Now you get the flavor of it. Car is go there with a plus sign, which means waiting for car something. Or simply the car there, and these three possibilities, and then the car park queue off those two, and here is where this the demonstration of this one combined with car park to get you car park. Okay, so here's my labeling scheme. You start with L plus, L plus, L minus. This one goes down here. This is the pair, and this one I haven't mentioned for words that I give her an apple. And then you go to higher order as well. This one for, although I'm here, I'm not here. These kind of sentences, conjunctions. It handles all grammatical categories in English language. Okay, here's where I summarize and then talk about the relationship to the others. Okay, we have a new tier of language. It has three components. One, a simple set of LR labels, as opposed to formal categories. Two, a stack. And a procedure for manipulating each set of labels, so as opposed to formal rules. Now, this brings back, in my mind, an interesting comment by David Ma on language and on theories of AI. He claimed that there are two kinds of AI theories, one called type 1 and type 2. Simply put, type 1 is very well described, it's like a formal thing. That you know the behavior of it, you know the rules are well grounded. So an example would be stereo vision. you see that. And TAC2 is very fuzzy. At that time, he described protein folding algorithm is a TAC2. You have to fix here and fix there to get it working. And he said language is a TAC2 category, because he does not believe the formal grammar can actually describe language. However, he did not rule out that you can have a subset of TAC1 theory inside a TAC2 theory. Now, what I have here in this set of rules here, this set of labels here, is a kind of a TAC1 theory for language. And here is really the messy bit for language. Here, you have to understand the meaning of things in order to compose these rules. Okay? So to write the program using my theory for application is not easy. That bit is easy, but this bit is hard. And each procedure has two distinct phases, an elimination phase and a construction phase. Elimination is because there's so many possibilities appearing on the words before you, and you have to say, oh, kill this off, kill that off, kill this off, kill this off. Okay, then the rest, combine them. So it's not a very smooth thing. So, how does language work? Well, it begins by realizing that sounds and symbols have meanings. Then when meanings of phrases are learned, one pays attention to the positional information, at least for English. The latter tells us how word meanings are moved between words. Then knowing the meanings of each phrase, that helps us to develop a set of routines to reconstruct the meanings of the phrase. That's why it's called a semantics parser. You have to know the meaning in order to construct this routine. So I propose a labor scheme, and my program demonstrates it's powerful enough to capture the grammar of English language. Categorical grammar. A lot of people say, well, left-right attachment, there are many algorithms of that sort. So the most famous is categorical grammar. Now, the major distinction between my work and grammar is this is a different way of implementing a formal grammar. You have the rules now. Subject, noun phrase, prepositional phrase, noun phrase. Okay. It is simply maybe a more efficient way of implementing a grammar rule. I am not concerned with implementing a grammar rule. I'm concerned how the grammar categories, like these are rules, get by the children, by the infant. How do they derive them? How do I solve the biggest paradox? This doesn't solve the biggest paradox. It's only a simple, more efficient way of implementing grammar rules. I have no grammar rules in that sense, in the formal sense. So that is the distinction. So some idea of future work. Can this method be a sense of being able to describe all languages? I'm trying to work out with other languages that use what they call prefix or whatever, like Japanese. Watashi wa. And if the wa there to indicate something, those kind of symbols in the language to indicate things, that has to be noticed as well on top of the positional information. I'll be trying to work on that. Can this method explain another interesting observations about language use? I'm more concerned with the theory rather than the implementation. Now, for example, it's observed that children, after the first maybe a year, then they learn language very fast. Okay. Now, my system will allow them to do so. Once they start to understand the routines and build up, they can learn it much faster. And other things, I'm now doing a survey of all the comments about how children behave in the language and see how my model explains those things. Well, this approach will be a more powerful method for practical applications. So, for example, can I use it to parse real-world sentences in a way that I can extract the surface structure out from it? I don't know. Thank you for a significant cost for listening.
Any questions or comments? Yes.
Have you thought about parsing German? It seems to me like this approach would work very well. German is famous for kind of having a verb stack, and complicated German speakers will finish their sentences with a chain of 5 to 10 verbs all at once.
Yes. I've thought of parsing many kinds of language. I'm just waiting for more funding. Yes, I would love to. I would love to, definitely.
I'd like to come back on the idea of extending your work to oriental languages like the Japanese, for instance. There is an important thing to consider in these languages is that not only the syntax but also the semantics are quite different from English and Occidental languages. For instance, in Japanese, if you want to say, may I open the window, you would probably say something like, even if I open the window, would that be acceptable? So how would your model deal with that kind of complexity?
I don't know the answer yet. I have to study these languages. I can postulate, but I don't know. I would definitely love to work on that. Japanese would be easy. I know part of some Japanese, so I definitely work on Japanese first and then maybe German later. Yes, John.
Some of the most confusing things to me in English are idioms. They're composed of words that look like words, and it's a lot of ways to mistranslate them. How would you propose to handle that? Would you search for idioms and collapse them into a single word? Like German, you know, often takes five words and makes one word out of it.
Again, I don't know. I think, thank goodness, the infants didn't learn or demonstrate ability to say idioms.
They learn something, like put up.
Oh, sure. Those kind of things I need to recover is the underlying structure. I'm not talking about understanding the meaning of the sentence.
I don't understand
the meaning of the sentence. I can recover the structure. I don't know the complexity of that meaning. Yes?
In the 70s and 80s, there was a school of thought at Yale headed by Roger Schenck that had semantics-based parsing that seems in some ways similar to what you're doing. How would you say yours is similar and different than what they did?
Okay. Now, in the 70s, without exception, not only just Schenck, but a lot of people who work on this area, they somehow, as I put in my first two slides on the two sentences about man eat dog, and they somehow focus too much, in my view, on the semantics problem. On how do I get the meaning? How do I get the meaning on this complex sentence? And the idioms, and all these complex things. And in some ways, I like to quote the Lieben. I think he's the one who mentioned that, you know, those days is kind of beyond their time. It's not the time yet to solve the meanings of words, and then try to use the meaning of words to pass it. I'm not concerned with that. The difference here is I'm able to recover the surface structure and show how meanings affect the whole language process. It affects it by guiding the way you build your routines to interpret those structures, those labels that you recover for the input. So that is the main contribution. Yes.
So the first bit of code you showed us was the dictionary that had, you know, each word with the structure. So for this to work, you have to, those are sort of a priori structures. So what's to say that your dictionary of all the structures isn't just an encoding of a bunch of already parsed sentences, which you are now mapping back into parsing. So it's like, you take a bunch of sentences, you pre-parse them to determine what the structures are, encode them in this dictionary, and then turn the crank backwards, and you parse stuff.
Except that it can be generalized. So it's not sentence per se. So therefore, if I understand conjunction that work this way, I put it in, you're right, I have to go this and do this here. Now, once I've done that, then I can understand other conjunctions. Okay? Now, again, so somehow after a while, I find, conjunction, I've not dealt with this case where maybe a preposition in front of a conjunction. I have to understand the meaning of that one. Okay, I'll put that code, and then in the future it works. Yes. Yes,
you say you understand conjunctions in general, but you have to have put each word that is used as a conjunction in English into your dictionary with the right structure.
Yes.
Right? You don't sort of derive
Not the program doesn't derive.
You know the and you figure out but.
Yes.
So you had to put both of those words.
Yes. Yes.
Do you have a theory about how these would be learned by the child?
Yes, but I would rather like to say that when I look at the literature more seriously and look at the psycholinguistic research into the child thing and then back up what I want to say and conclude from this. Yes, I have. Mm-hmm. I hope to write a paper to the BBN where there's a commentary on the paper. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Since you're focusing on meaning first and syntax second, then how about common sense? There was this research into common sense that's been going 20 years or more, and until they reached a critical mass, they couldn't get anywhere.
Sure.
So do you agree that that's going to be a tough component of you or your work?
Use
of common sense or something parallel to this notion of common sense, that as you build, as the child builds up a critical mass, then he stops thinking and baby talk. Mm. Right? So, but you need to bootstrap up to a critical mass before you begin using what we would accept as human language.
Well, you're thinking about using the program for processing more powerfully in the sense that you...
No, using the ideas of the common sense reasoning, where you have to have lots of things that you already know the meaning of, not parts of words or things, but you know things about objects and trees, and so you started that out that way. That's why I'm bringing this
no,
up.
No, I didn't start out that way. Okay. I start off bearing in mind that we have lots of meanings in our head, but I do not need to know how they are structured, acquired, or whatever.
Agreed.
And then I then work out this and see how that could influence in some way on this. And in terms of the implementation, I do not need that to get this implemented and tested. In terms of understanding the theory, I don't need that. But in terms of extending the theory further for further applications, like if you guys on common sense reasoning come up with enough powerful representation, I could plug that in into my system.
Well, all I'm saying is your process looks like the development of common sense reasoning.
Analogous.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, it's analogous.
Okay.
Is it possible for your program to parse sentences that a human would find it ill-formed?
At the moment we can parse a lot of sentences.
Yeah.
I have to admit. In New Zealand I can afford to play with these things. I don't have to worry too much about the correctness of everything yet. I'm working through it.
This is arguably a science fiction question, but assuming that you would use your kind of modeling in real-time speech recognition, how would you possibly deal with the incredible amount of noise that we have in almost any languages? Like, stuff like, right? You see, like
restarts.
Good question. Because one of the things I could do, and I want to do, okay, a lot of things I want to do, in addition to going to the beach, is that I would love to use this model as part of the speech process. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the problem with speech is inherently ambiguous in terms of the waveform research. I mean, you cannot do much to improve that. I mean, I have an accent, and therefore it will affect your interpretation of the waveform to get the words. But what happened when you got some form of output there and want to pass that into a sentence? Now, that we are working on at the moment. Now, the problem with speech is that within a sentence, there are phrases like, good morning, how are you? And then the sentence, and then how are you? And so on. So we are now actually implementing using my model at the back end of speech to process within an utterance that contain all these things and come up, I use a new term, which is very new, so don't quote me in a few years later, bubbles of interpretation. Where every time you see, when my output, at some stage, I got a complete mental sketch which represents possible the meaning of the sentence so far. Now, in speech, I could do that. So I say, I see you this morning in the park. Oh, well, that's too bad. That's a complete sentence. Or something like that, a fragment. I can then pick up fragments from the speech data that possibly make sense. And so, yes, I am going to use this for speech data.
Any other questions? Yeah.
I just have a comment. In case anyone is confused, as I was when I went to New Zealand, the term car park means a parking lot.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
Right. Same thing, Luke.
Jeffy is very kind to come to New Zealand and spend 6 months?
Three months.
3 months helping me to debug my poor list. Unfortunately, he's back in California.
Okay, then let's be here at 2:10 for the next week. Thank you very much.